morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And Peter, what a smart shirt you have on here.
Oh, I do. Yeah. I have a smart shirt. It's something to do with Australians pretending to be Australian goods of some kind, even though I'm not sure they actually are. But there's a reason for that, because we have a little touch of Australia later on in this program.
Uh-huh.
What fun it is to start out thinking about the octopus.
Yes.
The octopus, which is predicting successfully so far the outcome of the World Cup soccer. And we'll know whether the octopus is right in the final right after this program. So if you're listening to this first, you'll know that we're following the octopus. We hope you are too.
And then we're going to pay attention to Jose Andres, who claims that Spain wins. This chef restaurateur from D.C. says, and also I guess from the West Coast now too, says that he will stop serving octopus, which, as we know, takes a big, large chunk of Spanish menus.
But octopus will become a protected species, at least as far as Jose Andres is concerned. So we'll see what's happening. On the Menu has had no success predicting the outcome of the World Cup. So we're hoping the octopus does a better job than we are. I'm sure that whatever happens, the octopus will point towards Spain as the winner. There's really not much question about that, because I don't think they cook a whole lot of octopus in the Netherlands.
Maybe,
who knows?
Maybe
who knows?
It's exactly right. Why he'd like the Netherlands to win.
But I guess we better get on with this program.
Right. We are in Alicante program.
We're still in Spain, at least for the first part of the program.
Yes.
And three very interesting and different restaurants. Two very traditional, one really dramatically modern space, most unexpected part of Alicante, and all places that you're going to want to enjoy for a different set of reasons. So let's go, first of all, to our interview with New Manolin, and you'll hear their story, so there's no reason for me to explain what the new means. You can probably figure it out anyway, but we're going to find out much more.
Alicante continues to delight us, and we've had a lot of good food and lots of beautiful architecture and beaches to look at. But we particularly have liked the people that we've met here. And our latest good friends are Silvia Castillo.
Sí, 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 muy bien, muy bien.
And also we have Andre Albelardo, who's going to be doing the translations for us. We are at Silvia's family restaurant called New Manolin. Welcome, Silvia, and welcome, Andre.
Thank you very much.
Gracias.
This New Manolin means what?
Pues New Manolin es un negocio familiar en el que prima dos cosas fundamentales para nosotros: la materia prima del producto y el cariño hacia los clientes.
This is a family business. We don't have two ways to make the big place like here. It's like the fresh things and a good clients. Okay.
Well, you're very busy. It's a very large restaurant, is it not?
Sí, sí, es un restaurante que tiene una capacidad importante y además contamos con varios reservados.
Now, the story of the origin of the restaurant and the name is very interesting. Perhaps you would like to tell us about that.
Okay. So the first place, the first in Manolin in Alicante is near from the Plaza de Toros.
El 40.
And,
el Manolin en
since
el 40.
1940 in Alicante. Okay, we started in this.
So you must be doing something right.
Yeah, of course. So after this, with the grandfather of Silvia,
he
started. And his and she's mother started there, okay, and came here to the middle of a town, like now, of Castaños Street and Villegas number 3. Oh?
1972.
In 1972. And they changed the name because the No Manolin means New Manolin. Okay, just this, but this is a business, the family business, okay? So it's a big traditional.
Now you have another restaurant and another food operation.
Yes.
Sylvia, tell us what those are.
Vamos a ver. Este restaurante, el No Mandolin, se inauguró en el 72, como hemos comentado con anterioridad, y poco a poco fue haciendo diversas reformas, hasta la última, que fue en el año 2000, que es esta parte nueva que estamos viendo. Mm. Y en 1994 inauguramos otro restaurante, que es el restaurante Piripi, en la nueva zona comercial de Alicante. Con la misma filosofía que el No Mandolin.
With the same philosophy, like No Mandolin, we'll start another place in the middle of town, and then another place front of the train station and Corte Inglés. Okay, the name is Piripi. In 1994.
It's a department store.
Yes, department store. Yeah, I'm sorry. So we start in 1994 with the same philosophy like here.
Well, you have very loyal clients because I've watched them all. They know exactly what they're going to eat, which is amazing since you have an enormously long menu. You have everything, don't you? You have fish, shellfish, rice, it goes on, meat, dessert, and everything fresh. Fresh is the hallmark of this place, huh?
Sí, sí. Para nosotros es muy importante, lo más importante es la calidad del producto e intentar que la cocción que se haga o la cocina que se haga respete sobre todo los sabores y la esencia del producto, de la materia prima.
The most important for us is the quality of the fresh things we have. Okay, so when the cookers, when the chefs, on the kitchen, we start and try to make some different kinds of plates. So never rest the original flavor of the thing.
The ingredient, yeah. Okay?
We heard something a little bit earlier on that perhaps today is Monday and at lunchtime, on Monday the shrimp are not here yet.
Oh.
But by this evening there will be. Can you tell us that story?
Normally in Spain.
Ah, claro.
¿Por qué?
Claro. Bueno, pues dilo. Tú sabes la razón.
Normally in all places in Spain, in the Monday morning, it's so difficult to find the seafood. But I know this information is true, okay? This place is the only place in Alicante. Can you get the fresh seafood in the morning? The Monday. What in the morning afternoon?
Everybody listen to that. You want fresh seafood on a Monday, there's only one place you can come, says Andre.
Yes, of course. I said it, I promise you, it's true.
Andre is from Brazil, right?
Yes.
I don't know how you got here, but that's another story. I wanted to ask Sylvia if she knew from when she was a little girl that she was going to run this restaurant empire.
Sí. Sí, pregunta
the
por...
The child or she?
No, Sylvia.
Ah, cuando eras pequeña.
Sí.
Sylvia. Cuando es pequeña.
Sí.
¿Cómo era?
Yo sabía si iba a pasar
algo. Sí, imagino por lo que quiere decir. Bueno, pues yo, lógicamente, al ser un restaurante familiar, he vivido desde pequeña lo que es la hostelería, casi que la llevamos en la sangre. Y sí, la verdad es que desde bien pequeña tenía claro que quería continuar en este negocio porque me gustaba el ambiente, me gustaban los olores, me gustaba todo lo que me recordaba al restaurante.
But it's a good thing that your family has another restaurant because your brother runs that one, I think. Am I right?
Yes, you're right.
Sí.
Sí. It's like it's a family business. Okay, so we'll start with this and make a big place. So we'll need another one in a different place to continue the saga.
Sí, pero de todas formas lo llevamos todos lo mismo. O sea, vamos a ver, las compras están centralizadas, la administración del restaurante está todo centralizado. Lo que pasa que por comodidad o por eficacia, cada uno está pendiente de un restaurante, pero está todo centralizado.
All things make here. The accounts, all the problems will stay here. But to make a better and more faster the decisions, his brother stay there and she stay here.
Uh-huh, okay. However do you manage, you have such a full life, Sylvia, how do you manage? You have two small children, you have all this work, how do you do this?
Pues teniendo un equipo estupendo a mi lado.
Well, they are big partners here, so the best partners here to make your life better.
Y bueno, y contando también con la ayuda de mi familia todavía, que me ayuda mucho.
I know, all family help us.
Yeah, well, I want to ask you next about the food, but I want to say, listeners, that as really lovely as Sylvia sounds, she truly is. She's like the nicest human being you've met in a long time, and we certainly enjoyed meeting you, Sylvia. Tell us now a little bit about the food. I think there's almost anything anybody seeking good quality Spanish food from this region would ever want is found here. What are some of your biggest, most popular specialties?
Sí, bueno, pues aquí yo me declinaría por nombrar las gambas, o sea, lo que es el marisco, la gamba roja de Denia a la plancha y la quisquilla hervida, pescados a la sal y arroces.
So the red shrimps, the boiled shrimps, different kinds of rices is I think the most famous plate here.
Yes. I saw somebody eating radishes.
The name is rabano. It's red.
Sí, sí, sí,
and
sí,
white
sí,
inside.
Sí, sí, rabano.
Ah.
Yeah. Everyone was eating. It's the season. Yeah. And your food here is seasonal.
Yes.
Yes.
And
yes. Ah, es el rabano.
So now we know we have a new word. Your website. Let's have that so the people can look up on the website and see what you're about and also make reservations.
Yes, yes.
Sí, es www.noumanolin.com.
And that, by the way, is noumanolin.com. And you say, how do you say W is in Spanish?
W.
W, W, W. In Italy, they do vu, vu, vu.
Ah, vale, lo de doble V.
Well, we had a wonderful time, and we're planning later, since we have to depart from this gorgeous part of Spain, we're planning on visiting your brother and having those red shrimp that I can't get enough of.
Claro, a tomar las gambas.
And muchas, muchas gracias.
Gracias. Gracias.
And now we'll take a short commercial break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. I will admit to the fact that as we proceed, our Spanish isn't getting any better. But we're continuing down the path of deliciousness, and our next guest is another restaurant we would recommend called Darsena.
And Darsena's all about rice, as you'll hear.
We just had the most marvelous degustación tasting menu. I'm going to actually let Ramon describe who he is, his full name with the pronunciation, and where we are. Ramon.
Oh, yeah, my name is Ramon Vilaseca Lalanda. It's so difficult, surnames. And then I'm the sommelier and ranch chief to the Darsena restaurant in Alicante, Spain.
And a pleasure for us to be here. Does the name mean anything? Tell us the name.
Oh, the name is... It's really, really typical here in Spain. Ramon is...
No, the restaurant name.
Oh, the restaurant name, Darsena. It's the dock of the bay, or in then it's called Darsena in Spanish. Is English is the dock of the bay, more or less.
Okay, and so that explains where we are. Part of this attraction for this restaurant is the gorgeous situation, the view. Tell us where we are.
We are in the of Alicante, in the Marina. It's the Marina Deportiva. It's where the sailor, the sport and sailors, dogs in Alicante. It's really a pretty, pretty sport dog in Alicante.
And the restaurant itself is just gorgeously appointed, and it's quite large. How many seats do you have?
Oh, the restaurant was born in 1961. It's the old restaurant in Alicante, in a town, and it was founded by the father to the actual manager the restaurant. It's a 50-year-old restaurant.
But this is a different location or the same location?
Still, Darsena born in the old part to the sport sportive port, and then it was relocated 14 years ago in the new phase to the port, and it's called the Levante Mall, and it's 14 years old in this location.
How many seats do you have? It seems to be a very large restaurant.
Yeah, we have two different floors in the main floor. It's two different areas. It's a little area to the smokers and the big area to non-smokers. And the capacity, it's probably for 130 persons. And then we have the first floor. It's with three different parts. Usually it's used to the reservation places. It's for 100 persons more. It's the first level.
Well, I mean, there's a certain big buzz around this place, but I mean, I was overwhelmed. Its specialty, of course, is rice dishes. And I read where you have 170 different rice dishes. How could this be true?
Well, actually, I think that Darsena is the restaurant with more rices in the cart. Is and rice for us is and in the Levante of Spain, in the area Levante area in Spain, is so important. It's like a culture to the rice, and we made 170 different rices, is with fish, meat, vegetables, seafood. And, well, it's more or less the speciality to the Darsena.
I was overwhelmed. Peter has a question.
Yeah, on the menu, listeners, you will recall that we were in Valencia last October, and, of course, we had Dea there because the Valencianos insist that they invented it. Now, I suspect that from Alicante, Ramon has a different view, but something else we noticed on the menu, you have two kinds of beer. One is called hard rice, and the other is called soft rice. Now, dry rice and soft rice. Can you explain the difference?
Well, the difference is that paella, it's a name given in Spain, usually to the rice with chicken and seafood. This is the typical paella, but in Alicante, paella are called rice. And then the difference between the soft rice and dry rice, it's that dry rice is it's when the rice take all the water and then it's the grains are totally dry. And then the soft rice, it's 1 minute before than the rice take the water, and then we take off to the fire in the kitchen, and then it's sent it to the client, because many people in Spain prefer the soft rice to the dry rice, but it's only the difference. This is the difference.
Well, we now had this wonderful tasting menu that's on your, I could hardly navigate this menu. You have so many varieties of not only rice, but seafood, shellfish, and even meat. Let's talk a little bit about what we had tonight. It was quite a long tasting menu. It started out with this oyster.
Yes, it's the menu is the degustation menu that we offer to the clients in Darsena, and I think that it's a good representation to the variety that we offer in the cart. Okay, the degustation menu start with oysters made in the oven, is with some butter, is with gratin. It's really, really nice. And then after this, we made the red shrimp carpaccio. That red shrimp is so typical from the coast to the Alicante and Valencia. And it's made with a marinated sauce. In the third, we have the rye. It's made on the oven too. It's and then it's finished in grill, and come with some little pieces of garlic. In the fourth place, we made vegetables and rice, and soft because we think that is the vegetables with the rice, the good combination. It's made in soft rice. In the five place, we have is the pork cheeks made with a really good red wine sauce that the typical red wine from Alicante is called Monastrell. The great variety is really good. And we finish with a really good dessert. It's an strudel. We made with a little portion of cinnamon ice cream beside the strudel. And well, we finish with a pretty coffee from Colombia. And I think that we think that it's a great combination of flowers.
Now, Peter wants to say, I want to say that I was very surprised that you had green tea, which I drink.
This has to be one of the most beautiful locations for a restaurant on the menu has ever seen, because as we look out the window in any direction, there are boats. There are big boats, there are little boats, but mostly very big boats. But before we say goodbye, we have a very special guest, Antonio Perez Planeles, who is the manager of Darsena, who came over. He said, I speak very little English, but I think, Antonio, you will have just a word for our on-the-menu listeners.
Darsena va a cumplir el año que viene 50 años, y estamos en esta actual ubicación desde hace 12.
Yeah, it's more or less the same that I tell you. Darsena next year is the anniversary, and then we are in the actual location from 12 years. I said 14, but it's 12 years.
And how can people find out more about Darsena restaurant? On the internet or and reserve and come here as we did.
Sí, en Darsena tenemos comunicación con el mundo exterior desde nuestra página web darsena.com y tenemos contacto ya con clientela después de 50 años de muchas procedencias de no solo Europa sino de Estados Unidos, y en ese sentido estamos en contacto con nuestros clientes a través de un cuestionario de opinión que todos los días damos a los clientes.
Darsena have their own web page, and the clients can take it more information and picture and the menu too, and then can give the reservation. And in 50 years, the manager said that we have a lot of clients from many parts of Europe and the United States, and they it's in good relation with us through internet to the red.
Well, the one thing that all of you radio listeners or internet radio listeners are missing is how really beautiful the setting is, as we've talked about, and also how gorgeous the plates were. But we will be posting photographs of some of these beautifully presented dishes on our website under OTM and Pictures. And you should see how gorgeous these guys are that are talking to us, including my husband, who's working all the technical things. And anyway, we've had a wonderful time, and muchas gracias.
Thank you very much for you and your husband, and it's a pleasure for us. And we hope that you came back next time. And okay, and Darsena is open for us and for your friends. And okay, you only write on call us, and it's no problem. And the last words, I think that is for Antonio.
Bueno, para nosotros es un orgullo que más allá de nuestras fronteras vengan a visitarnos y a trasladar la tradición que Darsena representa en nuestra ciudad y en este país por su especialidad de cocina, y donde las puertas siempre están abiertas a toda clase de clientes.
Well, Antonio said that thank you, and that it's so pride that the Darsena in Alicante, it was a good restaurant, and that the people for another countries take a good impression, and it's okay. Thank you very much, and he's so fun too with this.
And now another break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, here we are again, and we're moving on to yet another Alicante restaurant, which is kind of a... Why don't you do the setup for this one, Rabbit?
Well, one of the most remarkable things about Alicante is the vistas. The vistas of the city. The city's dominated by a castle on top of a remarkable rock formation, which is the reason that the city got there in the first place, I guess, because it was a defensible position. And around the edges of this mountain where the castle is located.
And we did wander through this.
And we did. And we went from
almost
there.
I killed myself.
We went from there straight to lunch at a restaurant called La Ereto, which is absolutely amazingly positioned halfway up the mountain, looking out over the city of Alicante, over all the wonderful views, the beaches, the marina, the esplanade. You can see the whole city fanned out ahead of you in what was actually a municipal project. So the city of...
Yeah, so it's an interesting...
the city of Alicante actually built the building in which a restaurant is now run by somebody else. A remarkable experience to enjoy looking out over the city. In fact, it's really curious. While we were having lunch, somebody who was obviously a tourist came walking along the outside of the building.
Which was not allowed.
which was really not allowed.
And
manager,
dangerous.
Who we interviewed very quickly ran outside and said, "You can't go here." So it's a place where you can enjoy either a beautiful view during the day or the sparkling lights of the city in the evening. And a place you shouldn't miss for that reason.
Well, On the Menu loves places with beautiful vistas. And we're obviously here in Alicante, and we're also talking to somebody who's very used to it, born and bred in Alicante, Antonio Lopez, who is the general manager and the sommelier at this restaurant that we just ate in, which we really La Ereta or Lerita?
La Ereta.
Why is that? Because you should actually cancel that vowel and make it an apostrophe.
Well, the name, it comes from the Dares Planet that you can see from here, that flat land that the farmers used to work there to whip the wheat. And that is the name.
And that's what Ereta means.
Yes, and then the park takes the name of that flat land, and then the restaurant takes the name of it.
Now, I mean, this is a restaurant that's just gorgeous, contemporary in design, and it's part of the whole park. Could you explain that to us?
Well, the whole park was built in 2004, and at the same time, the city built this modern building that now is the restaurant.
Now, how did you get this? Did somebody bid with the mayor? How do you get this situation?
Well, the city saw that on the hill next to the castle, there was a...
Which is where we are, right?
Yes,
next to
the- yes. There was a piece of land, totally wild, and then full of bushes, and really the people hadn't had the chance to do anything before this group of people who are running now the city thought that it was a good idea to have this piece of land and to build a park, and inside the park a modern building and a restaurant that can be a reference as a culinary building.
Well, I mean, the situation is so totally gorgeous. And the design, by the way, who did the design of this restaurant?
Well, an interior architect and then a city architect.
And who was the, who were the architects?
I don't remember now.
Okay, all right. They deserve a lot of credit because it's gorgeous. And you look out over this beautiful, absolutely, I mean, this rabbit, you know, this is this the Mediterranean or not? I mean, it's like...
Yeah, this is the Mediterranean. And
it's Mediterranean blue.
Hold on, I think it's a very good point at which to explain that this is for someone who is visiting LA County for the first time. This is not the easiest restaurant to find, but there are two ways to do it. There is the tourist way, the easy way, which is take a taxi, and then you're still not sure you're exactly in the right place because cars stop just a short distance outside, and the taxi driver says, you must walk this way, the restaurant is here, but you can't even see it.
Well, it's kind of hidden, yes, you are right.
And then there is another way, which is to walk up from the old town of Alicante, up a staircase and a set of ramps. Now, we may go down
from the old town, and many people don't use it to come up, but then once in the restaurant they see it and they go down through that staircase.
Now, is there a sort of a landmark that says this is where you get on the staircase to come up?
Yes.
Can you tell everybody what it is so it's not a secret?
Well, in old town in Alicante you see different posters and signs where you can find that staircase and go up here.
And it's marked for what? The park?
Yes, Park Loreto.
Park Loreto.
Park Loreto.
So yes. You're looking for a sign that says Park Loreto. If you want some exercise before dinner, you can do that. If you want some exercise before and after, you can go back down. Mm-hmm. If you're lazy, you can take a cab both ways. Either way, you will find a location which is quite remarkable. The bluest blue sea of the Mediterranean, the darkest green of the Mediterranean vegetations, and then up on the left, towering above, is the Castello Santa Barbara, which we toured this morning.
Yes, sir.
We worked up an appetite, I must say, because we certainly ate a lot while we were here. I had another question here about, like, who comes? I mean, is this... I have not heard any English spoken here since I've been here, and I haven't heard any French or Italian. Do mostly people who are Spanish come to this restaurant?
Well, there are a very variety of people who are our guests. People from Alicante, people from Madrid, people could come here to spend the weekend and have read or heard about us in different magazines or even in internet or from some other people. They have heard from us and they want to know personally us. And some tourists, yes, who ask for a good restaurant with a good view of Alicante in the hotels where they are staying. So the guests that come to our restaurants is a vast variety.
Okay, tell me your most famous dish.
Okay, so maybe our dish, el soparet, who has very popular ingredients from here, from Alicante. It has tomato, spinach, egg, potato, and sardines that are the ingredients that in the old days people from Alicante used to have as a dinner.
Now, this had an interesting surprise because you told me of most of the things that were in the dish, but you didn't mention the fact there was an egg in the center.
Yes.
Although I did find it. Now, is that part of the surprise, or does everybody really know that?
No, the people know that.
Everybody knows that except me. So if you get this dish and it has a wonderful, beautiful, dark orange Spanish yolk in it, you will understand why. To you, it's a surprise, but everyone here just loves those eggs.
Now, I mean, you love the food here. You're a native. You love the food here. Is there someplace else you like to eat? Like, Spain is just bursting with different cuisines. I mean, have you ever gone and eaten all this stuff in Madrid or Barcelona?
Well, yes, I've traveled all around Spain, even in Germany. I have worked in Germany. That's why maybe I love that much this restaurant and what it means to me and the people who visit us.
So, I mean, you're saying that a lot of those influences are expressed through this kitchen.
Yes.
Yeah, Chef is having fun. Chef is deconstructing things. Chef is putting foam on things. Mm-hmm. So he's introducing new concepts, but intersecting them with food that is traditional Alicante, would you say?
Yes. Well, he's taken the popular ingredients of this region, and he's cooking it his way, his style, but always with respect to the ingredients and respect for the gastronomy.
And that's where you predict that the cuisine, the kitchens of Alicante will rest. They will have roots in the traditional, and then they will also be able to tweak and create some new takes on the traditional mm-hmm. dishes. Is that true?
Yes, well, Daniel Frias, our chef, is one of the many chefs that are in the vanguard of the Spanish cuisine, and they are taking popular and basic ingredients, and they are working with them and showing the people that even eating the same things, that same ingredients that they ate years ago, there is a new way to show them and to put it on the dish.
Well, Antonio, you and I have a saint's day coming up tomorrow, the same saint. I hope I get presents. Do you get presents?
I hope, yes. We'll see.
You've been such a generous and gracious host.
Now, we mustn't let one thing, we must include one thing before we go on, because the wine list is, first of all, interesting. But
I love the wine list.
Categorization mm-hmm. is really fascinating. Can you say a couple of words to us about that?
Yes, okay. We wanted to be a little original and not to put in chapters like red wine, white wine, sweet wine, rosé wine. So we wanted to have fun, and we wanted the people who are looking up our wine list to have fun with us. And
it's fun. I mean,
to put
fun.
The wines in different categories like elegant, nearness, powerful, And
you had one I really couldn't even pronounce it. It was just sort of absolutely recognizably the very best. But what was the descriptor of that?
Incombustible.
It was like distinguished.
Elegant.
That was the one after that with the Vega Cecilia.
Incombustibles. Yeah, eternal, like eternal. Eternal. They were good 20 years ago, they are good now, and they will be still good in 20 years.
But the neat part about it is if you ask Antonio's help, he will serve you a wonderful crisp Chardonnay from right here outside Alicante.
Yes.
And if you press him very hard, he will serve you a Monastrell red wine from the same region. And that's what you'll need for your lunch. Well, you're done it.
We've had such a wonderful time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, hola, and a break one more time.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, we're back, and we're going to be taking a giant leap from Iberia to the Great Barrier Reef. And this is your interview, so why don't you explain what we're doing?
Well, we're making what is almost 100% Antipodean shift.
Oh, that's good. Can you say that again fast?
An Antipodean shift. An Antipodean shift takes us almost directly. If you went the direct route through the center of the Earth from Spain in a certain direction, you would finish up almost exactly in Australia.
And tell me about the Antipodean leap.
It's an Antipodean leap because it's going either circumference wise or directly through the Earth. You would finish up on the same spot. And at On the Menu, we pride ourselves in bringing you events which you really can't miss as long as you have all the time and the money in the world, which we wish we had. So this is an event we may not ourselves get to, but it's happening yet before the end of July. So if you quickly make plans for late July to be in Australia, or you can make plans for a longer lead time ahead around the Thanksgiving time, there'll be another event called the Great Barrier Reef Festival. It's happening thanks to the cooperation of a lot of very interesting people who you'll hear about in the interview. And I talked to them way down under just a few days ago. And we're bringing this interview to you because I think it's got a lot of very fascinating components that I'm sure you'll enjoy.
On the Menu is testing not only its tolerance for time, but also international telephonic communications. But thanks to the wonders of what is happening, we have Jill, whose last name I have forgotten for a moment, but we'll fix that in just a second. And Justin North, who's a celebrated chef in Sydney. But we're going to move him anyway. And here we are. It's after dinner time in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And it's after breakfast time in Sydney, Australia. And it's already Wednesday.
That's right.
But just to make
very
sure.
Very cold Wednesday.
But just to make sure that we were on the same page, Anne and Peter, Anne is resting after dinner this evening because we had Australian rib lamb chops chased down with a cheeky Darrenberg something magpie. You probably know it, Justin. The name is something magpie, and I've forgotten the first part of it.
And is it a beer?
No, it's an Australian red wine. We drink beer Australian lamb chops. I wouldn't think so.
Anything from Darrenberg is beautiful.
Yeah, and it was really wonderful. But and it's really appropriate because we're here talking about food and wine. But food and wine that's really very interesting. I was telling Jill just a few moments ago before we got on the air that I lived in Newcastle, New South Wales in the 1960s, and they were not growing grapevines any further north than Maitland. And there's a reason why this is important, because one of the reasons that we're talking today is a wonderful, we can't say young man, called Robert Oatley, who was one of those people who revolutionized the Australian wine industry in the 1970s and the 1980s and beyond, because he started growing grapes much further north in the Hunter Valley and created a wonderful winery called Rosemont. Many of you around the world will know this wine. Then he took over Penfolds and then sold off the whole thing and decided to start over again. Jill, do you know anything about that?
Yes, that's right, actually, Peter. He certainly was instrumental in the wine-growing business here in Australia with Rosemont, which is a became a household name, and now the Oatley family have, as you said, started growing grapes again and making some beautiful wines under the Robert Oatley Vineyards label here in Australia. And they're now out at Mudgee, which is a few hours west of...
Oh, wow, so they've gone west.
They have. They've gone west, young man. And they're having some great success out there. And, in fact, some of the wines are now available in the United States as well. So we are very, very happy for the wines that they're producing now, and we're delighted that Mr. Oatley has come back into the wine business again.
No, we can't leave Justin out here because Sydney... People don't realize this. People think Sydney is just a beautiful bridge that you can walk over, like Matt Lauer on the Today Show, and lots of beaches and all that kind of stuff, but it's also a great dining scene. Go ahead,
Justin.
Yeah,
well, the thing that's changed the most, I think, about Sydney in the last probably decade is the abundance of incredible produce. And you're quite right. Sydney's been renowned for its beautiful harbour and amazing bridge and, you know, a real tourist capital with a, you know, a really great, fun city. And it's sort of, and it's had that brilliant, really vibrant dining scene as well. And I suppose the problem for restaurateurs in the past is a lot of our produce has been brought in from all around Australia and around the world, which is interesting. But in the last decade, you've seen an influx of amazing little passionate producers, little small artisan producers, which has increased the excitement in the dining scene as well.
Now, you think Neil Perry might have had something to do with it?
Oh, look, I mean, Neil Perry and Tetsuya and Serge Enzo were sort of, you know, the generation of chefs that certainly led that change. And even, you know, like when we did our first book, probably it was about 6 years ago, there was going around all the different farms. The scary thing was that, you know, all the farmers were sort of in that older generation and there wasn't any younger people coming through. That's changed a lot more. I think the media's got onto it a lot more as well and made it a bit more exciting. I wouldn't say trendy, but certainly a lot more appealing to be in. And you can see a lot more of these young, passionate producers doing really interesting, quirky things.
Great. Well, we got you together today, not just because we wanted to talk about Australian wine and Australian food, but also because something rather interesting that we had on the menu thought was world-scale interesting, which is an event that we only found phase two, but the good news is phase two you can still sign up for, and phase three is coming in November. Who would like to tell us about the Great Barrier Feast Guest Chef Series event?
Well, I can tell Jill's you a
probably
little
the
bit
best to give you the...
Okay, Jill, go ahead.
I'll tell you a little bit about the event, and then Justin can talk about some of the wonderful things that he might be making for the event.
Absolutely.
We have a Great Barrier Feast Series that we have actually initiated on Hamilton Island. You're absolutely correct, Peter, in that the first event of this series was held a few months ago, back in March.
Now, hold on just a second, Jill. Let's say the Great Barrier, for those of you who really didn't figure it out, is the Great Barrier Reef, and Hamilton Island is somewhere towards the southern end of that, Jill, am I
well,
right?
Well, that's correct. I should have given you a geographical pointer there. You're absolutely right, Peter. So Hamilton Island is off the coast of Queensland, which is our northeasternmost state in Australia. And yes, we're part of the Great Barrier Reef. And so we decided that we would be very clever and call our culinary series the Great Barrier Feast. So we actually used to hold the feast on one weekend every June on the island and bring several chefs together.
So this has been good. So this is not a new event?
It's a different look at an event that used to be very popular. But what we found from our guests is if they couldn't make it on that one weekend, then they had to wait another 12 months. So we decided to give them a greater opportunity to get up close and personal to some of our fantastic Australian chefs. And we decided to hold three Great Barrier Feast events over a year. So we held the first one back in March in this kind of new format. And Tetsuya, kindly, was our very first chef that you both just mentioned. And he had a terrific weekend for us, and we ate and drank and like we've never eaten and drunk before. And now we're really delighted and honored that Justin, who is a fantastic chef, and I've been following Justin since he had his restaurant Bacasse in Surry Hills, which is now in the city, and of course he's got another new great restaurant, Etch, as well. But we're really delighted that Justin is going to host our second series, which is happening from the 23rd to the 25th of July up on Hamilton Island.
Okay, so guys, those of you who don't realize that it's winter down under, but it sure as hell is a cool relief from what it's like in Pittsburgh. I'm sitting in our recording studio, which is not air-conditioned. Perspiration is rolling down my face and threatening the electronics by short-circuiting because of the water. But, Justin, the dining scene is really exciting. Somehow the Bécasse and Etch have avoided us, or we've avoided them. I don't know how we managed to do that. So we'll have to fix that the next time we come, which will be as soon as I can get somebody to cough up first-class frequent flyer tickets for us to come down there for another visit.
Absolutely.
Because we really need to do that. But your history as a chef is very interesting, because your bio says that you work for Crazy Raymond Blanc.
Absolutely, yeah.
And a number of other people, several of whom have been guests on the Menu before, by the way.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow. Excellent. I was actually from New Zealand originally, a small little country of New Zealand, and did my apprenticeship there and then sort of explored a lot through Europe and did a lot of my training overseas. And then,
you must know Peter Gordon, undoubtedly.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. We've done a few events together. We don't see as much of each other because he's sort of based in the UK a lot these days, but we certainly do sort of hook up from time to time. But, he's an amazing chef, and he's done a lot for, I think he's really put New Zealand food on the map overseas as well. It's great.
Well, let's before we pass on, then, let's mention that the restaurants are Bécasse.
That's right, and Etch.
So when you go to Sydney, you got to figure out how you can include those in your itinerary. Are you doing anything particularly unusual?
Yeah, we are. I mean, I suppose the tricky thing for us is it's absolutely freezing cold down in Sydney at the moment. We're right in the middle of winter, whereas up on Hamilton Island, it's obviously in the tropics, so it's a lot warmer. So we're sort of trying to adapt our winter produce to make something a bit more light and fresh and fun for up in the tropics there. So one of the more interesting things, as I was referring to before about how we sort of use the local producers, wonderful local producer, these amazing heirloom carrots. They've got these beautiful purple, yellow and orange little baby carrots, which are quite, not just there for their colour, but they've got quite a unique taste as well. So we're sort of doing a little salad with the carrots and a sweet pea mousseline, and then the native Australian marin tail, which is like a freshwater crayfish.
Oh yeah, we love marin.
Yeah.
They're so funny because they start out blue.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And when you roast them, they get a beautiful sort of scarlet orange sort of colour, which is stunning.
In fact, Serge, who you mentioned at the Beta Pavilion, cooked one for us. I think it was year 2000.
Oh, wow.
It was year 2000. Yeah. We called him Mikey. somebody brought out Mikey the Marin to show him to us, because we know what a Marin was. And sure enough, Mikey finished up on the Menu later.
Yeah, but they're incredible. They're like a sort of a freshwater lobster, I suppose. But they're really sweet, succulent, quite sort of earthy flavour as well from sort of the dam that they inhabit. And that's one of the dishes. And then just off the coast, about 7 nautical miles off Sydney Harbour, is an underwater mountain called Browns Mountain. And that's sort of, it's rich in amazing nutrients and underwater flora. And you catch incredible blue eye trevella, which is sort of part of the cod family, I suppose.
Right, yes, I've heard of trevella. In fact, we've eaten trevella.
Yeah, which is absolutely stunning. We used to refer to it as blue eye cod. And then what we do with it is we rub the fillets in like a white miso paste, just very, very gently, more to season it. So you sort of get that nice sort of umami taste. And then we confit it by submerging it in one part grapeseed oil, one part duck fat, and one part olive oil. And then cooking it really, really gently. And then you sort of flake it into its natural grain, and you get these beautiful, tender bits of blue eye, which is absolutely stunning, which works nice for doing like a little cauliflower puree. And
now, what wine are you going to put with that, Jill?
Well, we're very fortunate, actually, Peter, in that we have James Halliday, who's a renowned Australian wine.
Oh, yeah, no, we have a lot of his books.
Right. Well, James is, very well known, not just here in Australia, but you're right, around the world. And James signed on with us to select the wines for all 3 of our events this year, and we're delighted for that. So he and Justin have already been working together, and he's been sampling Justin's
James
menu.
James actually came up into the restaurant, it was probably last week, I think, and we did the full mock-up menu, because we've got about 3 different menus, because the good thing about this event is it's really interactive with the guests, so we do like a cookery school first, so we sort of demonstrate some of the dishes that the guests will be eating, and then we have a wonderful lunch at the yacht club, and then we have a big degustation evening, sort of all in the one day, so it's sort of a action-packed day. So we sort of put a combination of those menus together, and James tasted them all last week, so now he's gone off with the task of finding some great wines to match all the malts.
So he's
it's a hard job, but somebody's got to do it, right?
So we, we don't quite know what the wine pairing is going to be just yet.
We don't yet, but we he did a fantastic job for us with Tetsuya's event, so I know that he'll deliver some brilliant wine pairings for us again with this event too. And Justin's absolutely right. Maybe just to kind of give your listeners a little bit of an idea about what happens on the weekend. On the Friday night, we have a welcome dinner at our beautiful luxury resort, Qualia, which is at the northernmost tip of Hamilton Island. And that's followed the next day, as Justin mentioned, by a masterclass. And one of the things that our guests have loved is this opportunity to really get behind the scenes with some great chefs. And I think that's a real treat for people. So Justin will be doing that masterclass at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning. We have an Electrolux kitchen pod set up down at our beautiful new Hamilton Island Yacht Club, and we'll be doing that down there, and that's a couple of hours as Justin walks us through some of his wonderful tips that we wouldn't usually be able to get. And then we have a beautiful champagne lunch with Moët and Chandon of kindly hosting that lunch for us down at the Yacht Club, so we continue on and continue to drink great champagne and eat some more wonderful food. And that night, because we will need more food and wine.
Of course.
We'll be having what we call our showpiece dinner back at Qualia with Justin cooking that through for us. I think it's, is it a seven-course degustation, Justin, that we're doing that night?
Exactly, yeah, seven courses, yeah.
And so we can see everything that Justin and his team are doing while we're sitting out in the restaurant as they're working hard behind the scenes, cutting the carrots and preparing the dishes for us.
No, I think somebody just flew over Justin's cell phone. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I
just got the most atrocious looking sound. But so listeners, there might be a going back. There might be a gap. Now, I want to make a suggestion to you, just for the hell of it, because there's an interesting development here in the United States, an interesting, shall we call it pink champagne, rosé champagne, but I haven't seen much in the sparkling Shiraz area.
Right.
And I remember I lived in Australia in the 1960s, as I told you, Jill, before we came on, and sparkling Burgundy, as it was called, was an interesting sort of wedding wine. It really wasn't very distinguished, but it was sort of fun to look at.
Right, yeah.
But now there are some people who are making it, and they're making it really well. And Domaine Chandon Greenpoint is one of those people who's making it really well. Here's just a suggestion. I mean, I hate to suggest things to James Howardy, but I think he would blow people's socks off if he served them a sparkling Burgundy that's so dark it's almost rhubarb colored. And they would absolutely love it, and I'm sure Justin could come up with something wonderful to go along with it. But then what would I know?
Well, there are some beautiful sparkling Shirazes around these days, and we are drinking
absolutely
more of them now in Australia. That's absolutely right. So, and
it's
they
a
are
nice way, actually. It's a lovely way of having that full-bodied wine where you can sort of have a little bit chilled and effervescent.
Right.
So, you know, when it is that hot, lovely, beachy day, that you sort of can do some interesting dishes with it.
Now, before we sign off, there's the third in the series is in November.
That's correct. It's
how much can you tell us about that? Some people like us, it takes us a few months to get organized to come all the way down under.
Sure, no problems at all. We're very, very happy to talk about that. It's November 26th to 28th. So that's when the weather's starting to get really warm and beautiful down in Australia, when it's getting really chilly over there in the US, and around Thanksgiving time. So you could come over here and give thanks for all the wonderful warm weather in Australia. And we've actually got a chef, a young chef, called Ben Shuri, S-H-E-W-R-Y, just in case my Australian accent isn't translating very well. And Ben is chef at a wonderful, very interesting, innovative restaurant in Victoria, down in Melbourne, called Attica. And he's doing some great things. So we're excited to see what Ben comes up with as well for our Great Barrier Feast in November. One thing I should probably tell you, Peter, is that if anybody wants to get any information, they can inquire at events, E-V-E-N-T-S, at hamiltonisland.com.au. Be happy to certainly answer any questions or provide any information or take a booking so that you could come and join us at one of these wonderful events.
Now, there's another website, www.qualia.com.au.
Yes, that's correct. That's our qualia address, but also if you just go to the main website, which is hamiltonisland.com.au, there's an events section there, and you can find out all about Justin North's event, which all the details are up there, and all the information about what Justin's going to be doing for us in July.
Now, Justin, what about a website for your restaurants in Sydney?
We've got www.thecass.com.au, so that's B-E-C-A-S-S-E, and that's got all our information for other restaurants and cafes and everything on there, so that's point of call, that one.
We'll be sure to stop by to see you in Sydney. We'll be in touch, I'm sure.
I hope so.
Before then, Jill and Justin, thank you so much for taking the time to call us this morning, your time. This evening, my time.
That's right.
We're sorry.
Thanks for having us.
We're sorry what happened to your team in the World Cup. We're even sadder to what happened to. I had two teams in that because I have two citizenships and both.
You've got England as well, haven't you?
Yeah, both failed me. What can I say? Except the only thing to do is go down under and commiserate with your good friends.
That's right. Have another glass of great Australian wine. So.
Thank you so much for joining us this evening. And
thanks, Peter.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that just about wraps it up for this week. And as we say, until the next week, same time.
Same place.
View.
bye-bye.